Hey, you guys, book review time once again. We have a classic for you today. This was actually not the book that I was going to do this week, but it so happened that the one that I started to do, or the one that I started to read for the review, was going to be way too long and I wasn't going to have a chance to finish it by the time that this needed to be recorded. So basically, I just took a much shorter book and one that I had read before, even though it's been quite a while since I've read it. And I said, okay, well, I can knock this out like in a few hours and read it. And I'm already kind of familiar with the story. So I decided that I was going to do that just so I'd have some content to put up. So today we're talking about Richard Matheson's 1958 A Stir of Echoes. Now, obviously, if you look at this paper back here, it just says Stir of Echoes on the front. That is because this edition of the book was put out to coincide with the 1999 Kevin Bacon film, which was just called Stir of Echoes, but the book is actually called A Stir of Echoes. Not that it makes a huge amount of difference, but you know. So as I mentioned, this book came out in 1958. Now, the interesting thing about this, I had read a lot of Richard Matheson's stuff prior to reading this book and prior to seeing the movie, probably. I mean, I had read Duel, I had read a lot of his short stories, I'd read I Am Legend, Hell House, probably one of my favorite books of all time, also a great film. So what ended up happening with this was that when I saw Stir of Echoes, the movie in 1999, which I saw in the theater, I was aware that it was based on a Richard Matheson novel, but I hadn't read it at that point. So actually, after I saw the movie, I went and like picked up the book and read it. Now, the interesting thing about this, and I will probably talk a little bit about the movie too, even though we have done a movie retrospective on it. It was a while back that we did it. Because Stir of Echoes, I feel like I try to like push it on horror fans like at every opportunity because I feel like it was a movie that kind of got swept under the rug or kind of flew under the radar. Like it did pretty well, like when it came out in the theater, but I feel like, that was the same year that The Sixth Sense came out. That was the same year that the Blair Witch Project came out. So I kind of feel like it sort of got lost in the shuffle. And it's a really, really, really good movie. And the first time I saw it, like in the theater, I saw it and it was really late at night when I was walking out to the parking lot of the movie theater. It like really, really creeped me out. It was really well done. But I will say that if you've seen the movie, which, like I said, you should because it's excellent, don't worry about it spoiling the book for you. Or if you've read the book, don't worry about, oh, I already know what's going to happen in the movie, because the movie and the book are pretty much completely different. Not in the sense that it's in an in-name only adaptation. I'm not saying that. The basic bones of the story are the same, but the outcome of the mystery, kind of the focus of the story is different. So I'll probably like talk about that a little bit just because I thought it was an interesting comparison to make. But but you can go back and watch our movie retrospective about Stir of Echoes if you just want something about the movie, because I'm going to talk about the book mostly, but I'll kind of talk about where it deviated from the movie as well, because I thought that was interesting. So the book is basically there. Okay, so there's a guy named Tom Wallace, and him and his wife Anne and their toddler son, Richard. I don't think they ever say how old Richard is, but he's old enough to kind of play out in the sandbox on his own. So I'm assuming he's like 3. So they live in sort of this, very 50s era suburb in California. I think it's a suburb of LA, if I'm, remembering it correctly. It's not hugely important. It could be just like a suburb anywhere, USA, whatever. So they're kind of like a very 50s middle class type of family. Like he works at a plant, but he kind of has like an upper little level office job. She's a stay-at-home mom. They have one toddler, and she is also pregnant with their second child. Now, what ends up happening? So they know all their neighbors, and it's just kind of like this very closed in. It's one of those kind of 50s, hey, let's go next door and, play bridge with the neighbors or like, borrow their newspaper or whatever. It's just that kind of stuff. So what ends up happening at the beginning of the book, and this is told from Tom Wallace's perspective. It's in the first person. He goes over, they all go over to this, like a little dinner party that's being held by their neighbors, Elsie and Ron. Now, Elsie, no one really likes Elsie. She's kind of portrayed as being sort of this attention. She's a little bit of like of an attention whore, kind of like she's one of those, oh, I think I'm way hotter than I am. And she's like super flirtatious and that kind of thing. So a lot of people find her sort of tiresome, I guess. But, it's the neighborhood. You have to kind of hang out with the neighbors. That's just what you did back then. So they go to this party at this house. Now, while they're there, it so happens that Anne's brother, Phil, so Tom's brother-in-law, is visiting. Now, he's in his early 20s, I think he's 20 or 21, and he is a psychology major at UC Berkeley, and he's really, really interested in hypnosis. So at the party, you know, after everybody's kind of had dinner and they're just kind of hanging out, he's like, I've done hypnosis and I got people to do this, that, and the other thing. So there's like this big folderol about who's going to let Phil hypnotize them. And obviously nobody really wants to, because they're like, it's either not going to work or you're going to make me do stupid shit and everyone's going to laugh at me. And nobody really does that. So kind of by process of elimination, Tom ends up getting hypnotized by his brother-in-law. And it takes kind of a while because he's like, he doesn't buy it. He doesn't think it's going to work or anything like that. You know, for a few pages, it's just kind of like busting each other's balls about it. So even though Tom thinks that the hypnosis is not going to work on him, boy, does it actually work. What ends up happening, and this is very similar to what happens in the movie, although in the movie, Kevin Bacon's character, whose name is also Tom, although his last name is Witzke rather than Wallace, he gets hypnotized by his sister-in-law. But, you know, it's essentially kind of the same. And she's kind of like a flaky, new-agey kind of person, whereas the dude, Phil, in this is kind of more like a hypnotist. Because I guess, like, back in 1958 when this was written, that was considered more scientific, I guess. Or it wasn't, like, seen as, like, you know, new-agey or paranormal or anything. Because, it was kind of like a legitimate thing that they did in psychology. Rather than kind of like more of a magician trick, which I guess would be more, I know they do hypnosis and stuff like that nowadays, but I'm just saying that back then it was seen as more, maybe more have had a kind of a veneer of scientific respectability perhaps. So yeah, what ends up happening is that, so while Tom was hypnotized, he finds out later from, you know, everyone else at the party, including his wife, that he dredged up like all these memories from his childhood that he had forgotten all about, and like people that he went to school with that he had forgotten about, and all this other kind of stuff. But, and at first it seems kind of like, huh, that's interesting. And, you know, he does crazy shit. Like, you know, later on, I guess Phil gave him like a post-hypnotic suggestion to like take his left shoe off and put it in the refrigerator. So he does it without really thinking about why it's weird. And then everybody laughs at him because they knew that that's what was going to happen. So at first he kind of thinks it's a lark. However, after the party is over and him and his wife go back home, that night he basically wakes up in the middle of the night, and the description of it is like really, really good. So he feels like just everything in his brain is just completely lit up and like turned on, and he feels like he can feel like all of these like thoughts and emotions and stuff like that just coming at him from all these different directions. And so he can't sleep because his brain is just like super active. So he goes out of the living room of the house where he proceeds to see a ghost, or what he first believes to be a ghost. Now, he doesn't know who it is. It's just this woman that's like in a black dress and she's looking at him very sadly, like she wants something. And he like basically loses his shit. So from then on, it comes to pass that what has happened is that when Phil hypnotized Tom, he broke open something in his brain. There is some implication that psychic ability or being a medium or telepathy or something like that, like sort of ran in Tom's family. He didn't really know much about it, but he kind of finds out a little bit. It's mentioned a couple times later on that his grandfather was a medium and all these other kind of stuff. So they're implying that he had always had this latent ability in there. It was just this being hypnotized and having these particular suggestions sort of opened him up. So now he is essentially feeling the emotions and kind of hearing snippets of the thoughts of everybody around him, his wife, his neighbors, and everything. Now, if you think about this, and this is actually really, really well described in the book, if you think about this, it would actually probably be really horrifying, because he is a very, like, Tom is a very down-to-earth, very everyman type of character. And he doesn't really believe in this kind of thing, obviously. So the fact that he has now become like a conduit for all of these people's emotions, like he just meets somebody or he, you know, it passes the neighbor in the street and he just, you know, feels all this, you know, hatred or angst or whatever it is that they're going through. This is actually a very torturous experience for him. And as I said, that's actually one of the most interesting things about the book, because it's in the first person. Tom is writing about just how terrible an experience this is, because he just can't turn it off. He can't control it. And it's just, you know, 24/7, he's just being assaulted by other people's emotions and snippets of thoughts. And he doesn't really know, like he can feel people's emotions or kind of hear their thoughts or whatever, but he doesn't really know what it's about or who it's directed at or anything like that. It's just all impressionistic. So it starts to kind of, I don't want to say it starts to drive him crazy, but it is like kind of torturing him and his health starts to suffer. And also his marriage starts to suffer because his poor wife, Anne, who is pregnant, you know, she doesn't really understand it at first. And he tries to keep a lot of things from her because he doesn't want to upset her because some of the things that he sees are very upsetting. But obviously, because it's taking such a physical and mental toll on him, she does notice there's something the matter. So for a long time, she just kind of thinks he's cracking up or he's just like going nuts or whatever. Tries to get him to go to the doctor. He doesn't really want to go. But then as it goes on and his visions and premonitions, he starts to like know what's happening. For example, at one point, him and his wife, they, you know, go out to dinner and they leave their son with a babysitter. And no sooner have they gotten to the restaurant than Tom has a very, very horrible feeling of dread that something is the matter and they really, really need to get back home. And Anna's just really pissed off about this. But it turns out when they, you know, tear ass back home, the babysitter is trying to kidnap their son. Like they find her down the street or whatever. So, you know, and he sees little things and big things. Like he kind of sees when he's at work one day and he starts feeling this horrible, horrible pain in his head. And he knows that something is wrong with his wife. And so he calls the house and it turns out that she was in the kitchen and she, like a big can of tomatoes or something like that, like fell on her head and like sort of knocked her out for a minute. You know, so he knows little things like that is going on. Another thing, too, is that he starts to understand or he starts to know what's going on with the neighbors, like Elsie, the woman who had the party at the beginning where he was, you know, where he was hypnotized. He starts feeling like she'd always, like I said, she's always been real flirty and a lot of people were like kind of didn't really like her, you know, didn't really put up with her that much. But now that he can sort of see inside her mind to a small extent, he can see like what a kind of a horrible, like grasping person she is. And it's like really, and so he doesn't even like to be around her anymore because just the impressions he gets of what it's like to be inside her mind are just so horrifying to him. And he also starts to feel like all the anguish of all the other couples in the area. Now, if you've seen the movie from 1999, the main thrust of the movie, even though, the, like I said, the bones of the story are the same, you know, Kevin Bacon's character, Tom, he also gets hypnotized by a relative and, you know, which opens him up to all these kind of psychic impressions. But the movie is a lot more focused on the murder mystery because that's what the movie is. That's what this is, too. But the book is much more, even though the book is actually quite short, it's only about 220 pages. Like you can seriously read it in one sitting. And it's a quick read too, because like a lot of Richard Matheson's other stuff, his writing is just very, I don't want to say terse, but it's just kind of, there's just no filler on it. It's not real florid. It's very straightforward, to the point. He doesn't like dick around, you know what I mean? He just kind of goes. So the book is like a really easy read. It's a page turner. There's not a lot of digressions or, you know, extraneous shit going on. He just kind of gets right down to the point, gets right to it. So the interesting thing is that the movie is just almost laser focused on this murder mystery where, you know, Tom sees a ghost in the house, which he does in the book as well, and starts to look into the mystery of who this girl is, you know, and who might have killed her. But the thing about it, though, and a lot of the other things that he sees in the movie are kind of all tied in to the murder mystery, the central murder mystery. Now, I understand, like, when you're doing a movie, and like I said, I love the movie and everybody should see it, but the movie and the book are two different things. So the movie, when you're doing a movie, yes, you do have to, like, laser focus on one thing. You can't have all these, like, hanging threads or anything, like, hanging out. So everything that he sees, you know, for example, in the movie, there is also an event where him and his wife go to an event, like a concert or a sporting event or something like that, and they leave their kid with a babysitter, and the babysitter does sort of try to kidnap him, or at least they have that. She actually kind of had a reason for doing it, and it ties in with the greater murder mystery. In the book, not so much. In the book, because the point of the book, yes, there is a murder mystery. Yes, he sees a ghost. Yes, it is a spirit trying to convey information to him. But the main thrust of the book and the main you know, the main thing that the story revolves around is not so much that, even though that's kind of like a through line that goes through the whole thing. It's more about him and his realization that this little suburban neighborhood and all these people that he thought he knew had all of these horrible secrets. Like, all of this shit was going on behind closed doors and he didn't realize it. But so now that he's has this psychic ability has been awakened in him, he realizes like how, you know, how this like veneer of respectability and suburban happiness or whatever, you know, the white picket fence kind of shit, how much of that is a lie, because all of this shit that's going on like at his neighbor's houses is horrifying. Now, one of those things, you know, that he sees does tie in with the murder mystery. And I'm not going to spoil it because I do kind of feel like, yes, the book came out in 1958. Yes, the movie came out in 1999. But I feel like a lot of people haven't seen the movie or read the book. So I don't really want to ruin the experience for people that haven't. And as I said, if you've read the book, the movie is not spoiled because it's essentially the same story, sort of, but the resolution of the mystery is different. The murder victim is different. The motive is different. Everything is different, you know, pretty much, other than just the barest, like, generalities of the story. So keep that in mind when you're going into the book. One, it's set in 1958. Even though, that said, it's not as set in 1958 as you might imagine, because, you know, if you've read some other stuff that was written in 1958, sometimes it could seem very dated. This book, not so much. There are some dated, you know, kind of things in it, like, you know, a guy calls another guy a crumb, which no one would do nowadays. That's very 50s. You know, and there's kind of some weird shit about what, you know, all the women are housewives. You know, there's also kind of a thing where, you know, if you're a woman and a slut, that's like the worst thing ever. You know, but that's real subtle. It's not like real in your face. There's also weird kind of shit about, you know, somebody joking about punching a pregnant woman in the stomach, which, you know, but other than little things like that, and, you know, the babysitter only charging 50 cents an hour. If you didn't know that this was written in 1958, you might not realize that it's that old, because it just really doesn't seem all that dated because the writing is so modern. You know, it's plotted in a very modern sort of way. So, I mean, I was reading some Goodreads reviews on it, and a couple of the people said I didn't realize until after I had read it, that it was written that long ago. Some people thought that it was written in the modern day, but that it was set back then. But no, it was actually written back then. But like I said, other than a few things, it doesn't really seem all that dated to me, which is amazing considering how long ago it was written. Another thing too is that the book, I feel like the movie, as I said, it's much more of a horror movie in the sense of being like just a straightforward ghost story, kind of, you know, I see a ghost and the ghost wants me to do something. Whereas the book is more, it has that aspect, but it's more of a suspense story. It's more of a thriller and it's more of a kind of a paranormal. It's kind of just talking about how you would react if essentially everyone's mind was suddenly laid bare to you and you couldn't control that. You know what I mean? So you're just kind of getting these impressions all the time and how horrifying that would be, how that would affect your life. You know, so I don't want to like oversell. It's not a real introverted book, but it does have that aspect to it where his character is kind of talking about what it feels like to have this ability suddenly thrust upon you that you didn't ask for. And also, you know, another theme of it, I think probably the main theme is, you know, how the veneer of respectability can hide, you know, this rot underneath, which again, it's, you know, nowadays it seems like a very old hat type of theme, I suppose, you know, kind of, oh, look at this perfect suburban neighborhood and all of these perfect people. But really, you know, they have all of these horrible secrets under this, you know, adultery and murder and all these other kind of things that are going on behind closed doors. So, you know, that's a very common trope in thrillers nowadays. In 1958, not so much. So this was a little bit kind of ahead of its time, I guess. And as I said, the way that it's written makes it seem almost like a modern story. So you can see why it was adapted, and it adapted quite well to 1999. In the movie, they did actually change the setting to Chicago, and they changed the family to a more kind of working class family rather than a suburban family, but it still kind of works. You know what I mean? It's the theme of it is still kind of the same where, you know, everybody has these secrets in the neighborhood that you, people you thought you knew and stuff like that. So it's a very, it's a universal type of theme. So I think it works really well kind of across the ages, whatever decade you set it in, which is probably why this book doesn't really seem all that dated to me. The only criticism I can, you know, that I can sort of point out, maybe for me, is that because the ghost story, yes, it is a through line through the whole thing, but because there's so much other stuff going on in the sense that he's seeing things all the time that, you know, he sees, like, for example, for another example, like the night before it happens, he sees this horrible train wreck in which like 47 people died. He has a dream about it and he wakes up and he writes it down. And then the next day it happens. And that is probably the main thing that finally convinces his wife that he's not just, you know, going nuts or making it up or, you know, fucking with her or whatever. So there's that kind of stuff. But see, that doesn't have anything to do with the central murder mystery. So there's a lot of that going on. But, you know, so when it gets to the very to the end where he finally figures out, hey, I'm going to figure out what's going on with this woman that keeps popping up in the house, because obviously she, you know, she doesn't just pop up in the house and so that he sees her. He also does like some automatic writing shit. Like at one point, the ghost like talks through his baby son. You know, he can hear a voice through it, like, so his, because his son also has some paranormal ability, which they sort of, you know, kind of imply a little bit. So when it gets to the end and he's like, okay, well, I'm going to figure out what this is, because obviously she's, you know, been murdered or she wants me to do something. I feel like the resolution of that was like really quick. You know what I mean? Because it's, because so much of the book is spent on other things that aren't directly tied into the murder mystery, you know, that are more tied into him dealing with his ability and seeing other things and his relationship with his wife. But interestingly though, if you go back, you know, because this has kind of like a big twist ending, the person that you think is a bad guy is not necessarily a bad guy. You know what I mean? That's kind of all I'm going to say about that. And that's not even all that accurate, but I don't want to spoil it too much. So it does have a big twist ending, but I do kind of feel like that if you go back and read it a second time, like if you finish it and then go back and read it a second time, then maybe, because I think he had been dropping hints the whole time, but I'm not real sure that he dropped enough hints that when you got to the end and the twist ending came and the mystery was resolved, I'm not really sure if you'd be like, oh, I should have seen that all along. You know what I mean? So I kind of feel like it comes a little bit out of left field. And like I said, the ending is a little bit abrupt. I don't know. It didn't really bother me that much, but I can see how some other people might be like, oh, okay, well, that was it. And then, you know, because it just seemed like I said, I'm not sure if it was sufficiently set up, or maybe I didn't pick up all the clues. Interestingly, I had read this book before, probably back when the movie came out, so probably 1999 or 2000. And I had completely forgotten, how different this book was than the movie. Two, I had completely forgotten the twist ending. So it was like a whole new book to me, because like the whole time I was thinking it was this, the mystery was like this one way. And then the end, I was like, oh my God, I had totally forgotten all about that. What do you know? Seriously though, if you are into Richard Matheson at all, I don't think this is as good a book as say Hell House or, you know, I Am Legend, obviously, which is probably his best book, or even The Shrinking Man, which I liked a lot. And I think this book has more in common with The Shrinking Man, just like I said, in the sense that this is one dude's experience with something extraordinary. And the murder mystery is almost, I don't want to say incidental, but it's almost kind of like more a background aspect of what's happening, like him exploring what's happening to him with this new ability. The movie, like I said, probably made the right decision in putting the ghost story, you know, first and foremost, putting it right in the focus and having everything else, like all the other things that he sees, you know, that takes place, all the visions that he has, tying directly or indirectly into the central mystery. The book is not so much like that. It's, you know, so just kind of know that going into it. But if you like Richard Matheson, if you like his style, As I said, if you don't know who he is, he's written a shit ton of stuff. He wrote probably all the best Twilight Zone episodes, or some of the best ones anyway. Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, probably the most famous one that he wrote about the guy on the wing of the plane. But he's written shit tons of stuff, and he's a fantastic writer, massive influence on Stephen King, and you can really see that if you read some of his stuff. So as I said, I don't think it's his best novel, but it's a real good one, and it's really entertaining, like the suspense builds up. And but just go into it knowing that it's not, if you've seen the movie, it's not exactly like the movie. You know what I mean? It's the same outline, but it goes in a different direction and has a different focus. But I would recommend both because I think both are really entertaining, just, you know, for different reasons. But yeah, so like I said, if you have not read it or seen the movie, it is Stir of Echoes is the movie. A Stir of Echoes is the novel. Like I said, not like it's a huge difference, but you know, there it is. So definitely check it out. And I will see you on the next one. Bye.